Good morning. How we doing? Right, first and foremost, I'm pretty sure that we're going to be okay here this morning. I'm pretty sure we are. Frantically working on systems and computers and the network here all day yesterday and into the evening. And one thing I can be absolutely sure of is there will be a radio show later on today at 5 o'clock. That end of things has been sorted. I'm not sure about this though, because this computer is still a bit temperamental. So it's the only decent computer I have at the moment with a camera connected to it. I was going to do this newspaper review on the radio this morning, but then you wouldn't be able to see the newspapers and the stories. So there you are. So we're going to give it another go. But the good news from my point of view is the live streaming, in terms of the radio side of things, that's good, and it's holding up and it's robust, and I have a radio show lined up for 5 o'clock today. Been a frustrating couple of days, but that's the way it is sometimes. And like I said yesterday, you either improvise, adapt and overcome, or you become a diva. I've never been a diva. A lot of things maybe, but not a diva. I prefer to just get on with trying to fix things rather than tearing what little bit of hair I have out left. So good morning, and good morning to those of you live chatting there. Thanks for tuning in. Let's have a look at the papers then. It is a Thursday, November 21st, 2019. And anti-Semitism, would you believe it, and the Prince Andrew fallout are making up the lion's share of newspaper stories today. A lot of anti-Semitism stories, different perspectives on anti-Semitism. So we'll have a chat about that shortly. And as I said, Prince Andrew as well, who apparently went to the Queen yesterday, went to the Queen. If you believe Prince Andrew, he decided it would be best if he withdrew from public duty, from public performances, from public engagements for the foreseeable future. It's rather more likely that he was summoned by the palace and was told that he wouldn't be partaking in any of these engagements in the future. So here we are, Thursday. This interview broadcast last Saturday on BBC Two. The entire interview, by the way, in case you haven't seen it, is available online on the BBC News channel and the News Night channel. If you haven't seen it and you want to have a look at it, it's still there. So the papers then, the front pages, anywho. Alrighty. This disconnects at any stage, just bear with me, I'll reconnect it. But don't despair. As I said, the radio side of things has been sorted out and dealt with by friends of mine who know a lot more about these things than I do. Pretty much anybody knows a lot more things, a lot more about these things than I do. There's the Telegraph, Duke departs from public life. That's the story. It's everywhere today. Underneath that is an interesting story. Elderly will keep their homes under Johnson's social care pledge. We've had this awful spectre, this dreadful reality, where folks who have worked their entire lives, paid national insurance their entire lives. I suppose you'd call it social security in the United States. They found that there hasn't been adequate care for them in their retirement years. Adequate care paid for through their national insurance contributions, public care. There hasn't been adequate public care, so they've had to go and spend money on private care. And to do so, they've had to release some equity in their houses, which is an absolute disgusting thing. Let me just adjust that briefly. Or they've had to sell their houses. Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, on the campaign trail yesterday, said this will end if he forms the next government. I wouldn't believe Boris Johnson if he told me the time in a room full of clocks. Because this, what's been happening to senior citizens, losing their homes, having to pay for their own care, despite, as I said, paying into the system for 40, 50 years. Those decisions to decimate the elderly population, to make their lives untenable, those decisions were made by people way above Boris Johnson's pay grade. So they can promise all they want. There's a depopulation agenda we're witnessing it every day of the week across a wide variety, across a wide range of issues and stories and geopolitical events. We know this. They're not going to make life easier for the elderly, because that's not part of the plan. But it's in the Telegraph anyway, if you want to read that there. So the Duke went to the palace. Indeed. "I'm sorry, mummy," is the headline in the Mirror. No point in dwelling on that. Prince grovels as he quits royal life and loses his £250,000 a year handout. He doesn't quit. He was told. He was told in no uncertain terms. The banned old Duke of York is the pun on the front page of the Metro. Same story again. This is everywhere today. You won't be surprised. It's everywhere. That's the Metro. The Eye Paper, "Crisis at the Palace," is the Eye Paper headline. A number of newspaper front pages going with Jose Mourinho, who's been appointed as the new boss of Tottenham Hotspur FC in London. Yes, I'm shivering a bit this morning. I'm not normally cold, but this is the studio room. Like I said before, there are six computers in this room running. It does get a bit warm, so obviously the heating is never on in the room, so I'm a bit chilly this morning, a bit chilly there. Oh, I'm not normally chilly. But that's the Eye Paper. And sadly, as we go through the papers, Andrew shamed into stepping down. That's the Express. I think we'll just quickly rip through these. Duke stands down. That's the Times. Lovely, the Duke. The Mail. Outcast is the headline on the Mail. Bombshell comes just hours after Mail confronts Palace with fresh claims. What are the fresh claims? We'll come back to that in a few minutes. And Prince Endy is the headline on the Sun. Queen let down by shamed son. That is the Sun. The Guardian. Scandal forces Prince to suspend public duties. Labour in £75 billion pledge to tackle UK housing crisis. Yeah. Money that must be borrowed, though. Borrowed. The Financial Times. Sunderland followed orders from Trump on Ukraine quid pro quo. This is the greatest nonsense ever that I've ever witnessed. This nonsensical, farcical, theatrical soap opera impeachment inquiry into Donald Trump. I'm not interested in it. I have no intention of reporting any more on it. Spoke to Mike Rivero about it last week. I'm not interested in it. It is irrelevant. It doesn't matter whatsoever. None of these people matter. And Scrooge ban on Christmas crackers is the headline on the front page of the Daily Star. I haven't a Scooby-Doo what that's about, and I couldn't give a shite, to be honest. So we'll leave that right there. So what's going on then? Well, there's a number of stories about Prince Andrew in the press this morning. Fresh allegations, new allegations, speculation as to whether he will cooperate with the relevant authorities or the appropriate authorities. Number of people noticed that. He made a statement yesterday, Prince Andrew, I'm sure you saw it, which he apologised for how he came across in the interview, expressed sympathy with the victims of Jeffrey Epstein, and said, did Prince Andrew, that he would, of course, be happy to cooperate with the appropriate authorities. What does that mean? Yeah. What does it mean? What do you think it means? Let me know. I'd be very interested to get your take on it. So the Mail then. Let's leave the Mail for a moment. So all the stories there, they keep using, they almost insist on using this picture of him with Virginia Roberts Dufresne, with Maxwell in the background. They use it like on a daily basis. It's interesting to me that he could or may in the past have ordinarily expected some assistance from the country's national newspapers in helping, you know, him with the disappearance of the story. But the tabloids and the broadsheets kind of together are not letting it go, and they keep using this image of him and Robert Dufresne. Of course, he said in his interview last week, infamously, that he had absolutely no recollection of meeting her, but wouldn't say that he didn't meet her. And hinted at this particular photograph being a fake, of course, but stopped short of saying that he believes that it is a fake. So there you are. That's in the Times. Now, the Telegraph today is interesting. Yeah, there you go. The Telegraph is interesting today. He did mention in his interview with Newsnight last week that he had met in the late spring, early summer, he had met with Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell. Funny, that interview last week, the BBC presenter Emily Maitlis struggled with Ghislaine, called her Girlaine, whatever the fuck that is. But it's Ghislaine Maxwell. And the Telegraph focusing today, even though he acknowledged that he had met her, the Telegraph kind of focusing on, well, why? Why? Why did he meet her? He said she happened to be in town. The Telegraph says that his meeting with her came only a fortnight after there was an announcement that the investigation into Epstein would reopen. Next thing, she's in London and he's meeting with her. Meeting with her what? To try and gauge how the land was lying? To kind of gauge, you know, what Epstein might say? What do you think there, Ghislaine? What do you think old Jeffrey might say? Will he mention me? Maybe he was looking for assurances from Maxwell. Maybe. Speculation, of course. I don't know. I can't say what he was doing, but there you are. She was here doing some rally, he said, and I just went to meet her. But that meeting came within a fortnight of the prosecutor saying they were reopening investigations into allegations made about Jeffrey Epstein. It's all very interesting, this, isn't it? Isn't it? Or is it really? Or is it? Is it a distraction of sorts? Epstein is dead now, isn't he? Although I am aware that some of my listeners, some of them, I don't know how many, I don't know what percentage, but some of them are happy to entertain the notion that Epstein isn't dead. Listen, gangsters don't leave living witnesses, would be my opinion. My opinion would be that he was murdered. So he's dead. So allegations about him and what he did are now pretty much fair game. He's dead. He's not going to take the stand in any courtroom to refute those allegations or be cross-examined by a prosecutor. So he's dead. But people are coming forward now all the time. And there are tranches of documents, apparently. And, well, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of hours of videotape, apparently. And Andrew is worried about what might be on those films. And this makes up the basis of a story in the Mirror today. And that story alleges that he, Prince Andrew, and his aides, his handlers, are very concerned about cameras. You know, based on the knowledge now. I mean, we've talked about this going back months now. But now the tabloids are talking about Epstein filming his guests using hidden cameras at his home. He's home in Palm Beach in Florida and on the island. And these are places, of course, that, as it says there on the Mirror, that Prince Andrew visited. He went to these places. Was he filmed there? Was he filmed entertaining women there? Was he filmed with underage girls there? We don't know. You might suspect that he was. But that's all to come out. Sean Atwell has done some good work on this based on everything that's in the public domain, piecing together what we already know. He's a good guy, Sean, the author. He's been on the programme many times. He was on the programme recently talking about this. Great life story, Sean. Backstory, spending time in Sheriff Joe Arpaio's jail in Arizona, selling ecstasy, trading. Very, very interesting guy, Sean Atwell. And we know there's a former sheriff's department deputy, of course, in Russia at the moment, and he has in his possession videotapes that may or may not implicate famous men and famous women. Maybe royal figures, maybe. So all of that is interesting. So there's the Mirror today saying that he's very anxious, this guy, and that the palace is very anxious because the palace hasn't a clue as to what might come out, what might yet emerge, what might yet, you know, come into the public domain. He spent a lot of time with Epstein, did Andrew? A lot of time, didn't he? Didn't he? And if the plane and the properties were wired for video and sound, if you were Andrew, you'd be very worried. I'm sure he is. So that's basically the Times today and the Mail and the Guardian. They're all full of the fact he won't be engaging in any public duty for the foreseeable future. They have alleged that his allowance has been confiscated or cancelled, and they're talking about whether or not he will cooperate with any ongoing investigations. What isn't clear at the moment is, apart from Virginia Roberts Giuffre alleging that she was basically handed to Andrew to have sex with against her will, is there anybody else out there? In the statements made by a number of people, including Jane Doe 15, who've given statements to the police, have any of those statements, or do any of those statements contain allegations about Prince Andrew, or do any of those statements allege that he was present when things were happening to them, when other people were engaging in non-consensual sex with them? It's all very interesting, isn't it? Yeah, it is indeed. So anti-Semitism too, coming up for 12 minutes to 10, by the way. Welcome to this live stream, this nonsense, looking through the UK newspapers Monday to Thursday. I will be with you today at 5 o'clock, live on the usual channels for a live radio show that I think you'll find very interesting. An old friend of the programmes who's never been on with me, Cherise Burchett, will be on. Cherise is a mother and a campaigner around vaccine efficacy. Now, she's very, very, very interesting. I had a long conversation with her on the phone yesterday while we were tinkering with studio. I wasn't sitting around on my arse, you know. And she's, nobody more than her, I don't think, has seen, you know, up close and personal what can happen when, as a concerned parent, you take to social media to talk about vaccine efficacy and vaccine safety. National media has been in touch with Cherise a couple of times and brought her on programmes and then abruptly cut her off. You know, they found her on social media and they've put her up against doctors and not given her very much time. Very interested in what's happening around mandating vaccines. She's a parent, doesn't claim to be an expert, doesn't claim to be a doctor or a scientist. She'll be on with me, and I will have another guest as well. It'll be a pretty packed radio show at 5 o'clock today. It's good to be back. Short break, but still, you know, Anyway, right. So anti-Semitism then. Rachel Riley is, I don't know what she is. She's a university graduate. She's a mathematician, a fairly talented one, as far as I understand. She co-presents, which I think is being very generous, really, a couple of programmes, one called Countdown, and then an offshoot of Countdown is something called 9 out of 10 Cats Do Countdown. She's, I suppose, a reasonably attractive woman with a brain, at least for mathematics anyway. And Countdown is a words and numbers game, which has been on UK television for about, it's not far off 40 years. It'll be 35 years anyway. Used to be presented by Richard Whiteley with the assistance of Carol Vorderman. People go on there and they choose 9 letters. Each time they play around, they choose 9 letters. They've got to make a word from the 9 letters, using as many letters as they can, and the winning score then, you know, they add up the scores each time. There's also a couple of mathematical rounds where they choose numbers and a random number is generated, and they have to use the chosen numbers to reach the randomly generated number. I know, don't ever ask me to explain anything. I'm absolutely shite when it comes to explaining things. But anyway, it's a game show. It's Monday to Friday, Channel 4, she's on it. And in the last couple of years, she's gotten bored with co-presenting Countdown. She's gotten bored with it. She's, I don't know, maybe when Riley, who's been presenting Countdown now for probably nearly 10 years, she might have thought it would have been a springboard to greater things, televisual things, but it hasn't. It hasn't. She does some work for Manchester United Football Club, occasionally, corporate stuff, but it hasn't been a springboard to a successful career in television. Riley identifies as Jewish, and in the last couple of years, she's used her Twitter account to behave in a very hysterical manner, accusing people of anti-Semitism, screaming abuse at people, and then blocking anybody who attempts to engage with her to determine why, what's going on with you, lass, what's happening. So she's a weird individual. She despises Jeremy Corbyn, hates Corbyn with a passion. And has taken in the last couple of days to wearing a t-shirt, which is a kind of a mock-up of an old picture of Jeremy Corbyn. Here's Corbyn being arrested at a pro-Palestine demonstration years ago, and he was holding a poster about Israel, and she's changed it and is wearing a t-shirt now that says that Jeremy Corbyn is a racist endeavour. And it's trending on Twitter this morning. She's coming in for a bit of stick, and presumably she's just blocking people. Corbyn was asked about anti-Semitism at the first television debate on Monday on ITV. Was it Monday or was it Tuesday? Tuesday, was it? I have no recollection. I don't know what's going on, to be honest. It's been such a mad week. I don't know what day of the week it is. The Holocaust Educational Trust has said that Corbyn's claims that people are being kicked out of Labour are blatantly untrue. This woman, Riley, leading the charge on Twitter. This is interesting, is because Corbyn supporters would claim, so they would, that this is evidence that the establishment is out to get Jeremy Corbyn. It isn't. It isn't. It's evidence that the Conservative Party and the Lib Dems and others are out to get Corbyn. The Conservative Party is not the establishment. It isn't. Politics is a fiefdom of the establishment, of the true elite, of the financial controllers. Of course, the Conservative Party and of course various identity groups are going to be screaming abuse at Jeremy Corbyn. Of course they are. But it's not because Jeremy Corbyn is any great threat to the order of things. He isn't. Remember, ultimately the elite doesn't really care who forms the next government. They really do not care. It doesn't matter a damn. And you have to understand this. This is why I despair of these emails. Are you going to go and vote against Rebecca Long Bailey in Salford? Are you, Richie? No, I'm fucking not. Do you not listen to me? Of course not. Doesn't matter whether it's Rebecca Long Bailey or whether it's the Brexit Party or the Green Party in Salford, it doesn't matter. Right? So this is not the establishment trying to get rid of Corbyn because he represents some great threat to the establishment. Of course not. This is just politics. It's what it is, right? It's always been thus. Don't kid yourself. I know Corbyn supporters are hanging on to this vain hope that Jeremy is going to be some sort of messianic figure and that he's keeping his mouth shut until he gets in. How many times have you heard that over the years and believed it and then despaired when it didn't quite work out like that? Oh yeah, Jeremy won't take on these people until he's prime minister. Really? And you think if he forms the next government with coalition partners, all of a sudden he's going to start screaming about Israel at the dispatch box, the racist, apartheid, illegitimate state of Israel? All of a sudden he's going to start doing that? Do you really think so? Think again. Think again, right? But anyway, like I said, it's everywhere today. During that debate with Boris Johnson, and we use the term debate very loosely, because it wasn't very interesting, really. He referred to Jeffrey Epstein as Jeffrey Epstein. And the comedian David Baddiel didn't find that very funny. He wasn't happy. But he's not the only one. Number of Jews, including the journalist Angela Epstein. I better be careful. I'll be accused of anti-Semitism. We don't want that happening, do we? Again. Here's Angela Epstein then. The way he said my name was so offensive. The journalist Angela Epstein blasts Jeremy Corbyn's pronunciation and brands it the caricaturing of generations of anti-Semitism. I'm going to be honest. I don't know what Jeremy Corbyn thinks about Jews. LiveLeak.com's Hayden Hewitt, one half of the TriggerWarning.tv team. Hayden, who's very much an independent thinker, doesn't look elsewhere for his opinions to be handed to him, isn't influenced by anybody else. Hayden believes that Corbyn genuinely does have a problem with Jews. With Jews as people. As a group of people. I don't know whether he does or whether he doesn't. I certainly wouldn't or couldn't be accused of defending him. I spend as much time criticising Jeremy Corbyn as I do Donald Trump or Boris Johnson. He's dreadful, Corbyn. Dreadful. I need say no more. So this woman was horrified. She was curled up on a sofa, sitting down to enjoy the debate, but wasn't giving it her fullest attention. And then she heard Epstein. And apparently that's definitely anti-Semitic, because that guttural pronunciation of it, unmistakably German, is anti-Semitic. And it's how people who dislike or despise the Jews would pronounce the name, she says. Now that's obviously horse manure as a statement. That on its own is not any proof that Jeremy Corbyn is anti-Semitic. I know we shouldn't even say anti-Semitic because it doesn't mean anything. Jews are not Semites, of course, of course. But anyway, look, just for the sake of the story. So she goes on about it anyway. Was I really hearing the man who wants to be Prime Minister say my surname with all the caricaturing of generations of anti-Semitism? That's bullshit. I've heard people say, pronounce Steen as Stein. Epstein is Epstein. Levenstein is Levenstein. I've heard people say Levenstein is Levenstein. I've heard Jewish people say Levenstein. It's a personal choice, isn't it? Why don't you tell us, love, how Epstein is pronounced and then we'll pronounce it that way. So it's interesting. It's everywhere anti-Semitism. And I suppose what it does is it stokes the fires of identity politics. It's a wonderful, useful tool. Because what you get is you get entrenchment. Do you like the actions? I realise some children are watching and I'm brushing up on my children's TV presentation skills. You get entrenchment, you get trenches being dug. So those who believe that Jeremy Corbyn is the Messiah and will end austerity and will restore social justice, they dig even deeper into their trenches, believing that these are attacks on him by the elite who are terrified of him becoming the next Prime Minister. When it's not true. It's all a smokescreen. But really, deep down, does he dislike Jews? I haven't a clue. Some learned and some smart men and women whom I know think he does. But I don't know. I don't know. The Times go on with anti-Semitism as well, but the Times scathing in the editorial written by Claire Foges, scathing that the Church of England is apologising for anti-Semitism in the 11th century. And this is funny, this is a bigger story. It's not just about anti-Semitism, of course. This kind of latter-day celebration of kind of self-flagellation for things that happened hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago makes me laugh. You know, this notion that you, as an English person watching this, you might be in your 30s, that you should have to apologise for the famine. You know, when there wasn't really a potato, well, there might have been a problem with potato harvesting, but Ireland didn't starve because the potato failed. You know, we had other vegetables. We had some cattle and some sheep as well. I'm fucking sure of it. No, because the empire had to be fed. And every Irish port was full of massive fucking English ships taking food out of the country. That's what happened. But we won't get into that right now. That's bad enough, but I don't expect people to apologise for that. I don't expect English people to apologise for Bloody Sunday. I don't expect English people to issue an official apology for the massacre at Croke Park. Why? Because you didn't fucking do it. It's as simple as that. Let's apologise for the slave trade. Let's fucking not. I didn't do it. Nobody saw me do it. You can't prove anything. I'm 40 fucking four, people. Give me a break. You know. Thanks for all the comments, by the way. I know. I'm working my way back into it. I know. I'm trying to concentrate, but I have an eye on this streaming thing all the time. I'm waiting to be bumped off. Imagine I was bumped off, but properly bumped off. He said it. He saw it coming. Why are we apologising for stuff that we didn't do? And it's a good article in the Times. You know, Jews were expelled from England back in the day. Well, they were, and that probably wasn't nice for those Jews back in the day. You know? It's like the Germans. Should the Germans be guilty till the end of time because the Nazis rounded up Jews, interned them in camps, and either worked them to death or murdered them? No! Did you do it? No. Would you do it? No. Fair enough. And leave it at that. Crazy, huh? Crazy. We must apologise. We must atone. No, we must fucking not. You know, if that leads to these silly reality where you have statues being taken out of universities because the statue was brought during colonial times. Yeah, but these things happened. Surely we can evaluate and analyse these periods of history at the same time without having to remove reminders of those periods. How can a black dude, and if you're black, I'm sorry, I really don't give a fuck, to be honest. How can you honestly say with a straight face that some statue of some slaver or some fucking guy who profited from the slave trade, how can you possibly say with a straight face that that somehow impacts on you? You fucking useless bastard. Fuck off. Go home. You're no good. You know, you might hear something that might, I don't know, trigger you. And you might die of a heart attack. Go home where you'll be safe. Madness. Mad times. Apologising for anti-Semitism in the 11th century. Fuck's sake. Wow. Mad. Mad, I tells you. What else have we got? This is good in the Telegraph. I've been in touch with these people, but because things have gone tits up during the week, I haven't managed to get them on. But I know you've been following this. Or I know you will have been following this. Editorial, Telegraph view, the police must rethink its Orwellian obsession with transphobia. Just won't go away this one, will it? And this is very interesting now. Let me... Totally disorganised today, am I? Yeah, fuck that. Totally disorganised. Anyway, this is a court case in the High Court. It's ongoing. Where a former police officer was basically, his name is Harry Miller. And I've been in touch with, he runs an organisation now called Fair Cop. Or he's involved in an organisation called Fair Cop. And he's taken... basically he's taken Humberside police to court because they came after him because he tweeted something that some member of the public believed was transphobic. Yeah. And he's suing the college. The College of Policing, that is. Over this. Because they recorded the complaint made against him as a hate incident and came after him. And of course, hate crime is where the victim of a crime perceives that the crime was committed against him or her because of their sexual orientation, their religious denomination, the colour of their skin, whether they're a woman or whatever the hell, right? So you understand that. And that's ongoing at the High Court. Brilliant. It's a really important case. So after the investigation, it was revealed that He was told, Harry Miller, the former police officer, that he hadn't committed any crime. However, the College of Policing recorded the incident as a hate incident anyway. And he's taken them to court. That's it. That's it right there. And I've been in touch with the organisation to try and get some comment. They're up for it. They're up for coming on. But of course, I couldn't do a radio show yesterday. Or Tuesday, sadly. So there you go. Right? Mad times. 6 minutes past ten. We're still on. We're still on. Do camera on. We're still on. Let's go back to the Holocaust. This is in... He laughed when he said the Holocaust. That hateful bastard. Extinction Rebellion. This guy Roger Hallam. We've seen him a bit. He's been on TV quite a bit in the last few months. He did an interview with a German television station. And in the interview, he said the Holocaust wasn't unique. In fact, he spoke to Die Zeit newspaper. And he told Die Zeit newspaper that the Holocaust was just another fuckery in human history. It's not unique. You know, it's not unique. There are many instances in recorded human history where one group of people massacred enormous amounts of another group of people. Massive amounts. So in that, he's right, of course. The internment, the murder and torture of a group of people isn't unique in human history. But you can't say that. That's a career ender. Right there, unless, like me, you're completely independent of any organisation, in which case it isn't a career ender. It's true, of course. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Don't speak about the Holocaust. Don't speak about Jews. Just don't speak about them. I think that's the desired outcome. Just don't ever mention Jewish identity. Don't ever mention the Holocaust. Don't ever speak about it. Anyway, according to the Mail today, this guy's time with Extinction Rebellion might be coming to an end. He compared the murder of 6 million Jewish people at the hands of the Nazis to other historical massacres. How dare he? Because the Jewish suffering was unique. No, I'm sure if you get shot in the back of the fucking head, or decapitated, or crucified, or fucking guillotined, I'm sure it feels just as bad regardless of your identity, right? Eh? Fucking hell. Just don't speak ever about these issues. Because you can't say the right thing. The extremity of a trauma can create a paralysis in actually learning the lessons from it, he said. The fact of the matter is millions of people have been killed in vicious circumstances on a regular basis throughout history. He talked about the Belgian colonialists in the Congo, of course. And what happened there? You can't say these things. This is a lunatic asylum we navigate on a daily basis. Don't compare the Holocaust to anything. The Jews had it worse than anybody in history. Well, no, they fucking didn't. No, they didn't. Because, again, Jesus Christ, look at Kosovo. We could be here all day long. Look at Chechnya, here all day long. Look at Vietnam. Do you know how many people were killed in Vietnam? Conservative figures reckon 4 million Vietnamese were fucking slaughtered. 4 million. Do you think their experience was less bad than the Jews who were murdered in Nazi Germany? No! Of course not. You can't say that. Jewish experience was unique in all of humankind. Fucking hell. You getting sick of it now? I've been sick of it for years. It's just that I don't care. I can say what I want to say without fear of losing my job. Because I'm independent. I'm independent. Mad, huh? So he's gone. You won't be seeing him around here no more. That's a famous line from what film? Rocco? No, you won't be seeing him around here no more. Godfather, of course. The Godfather. There was no prize. Speaking of free speech, this is where you do get to a line that you probably shouldn't cross. young student, he's young, he was on Facebook after one of the terrorist attacks in the UK in 2017 or 2018. He lost his shit and he live streamed on Facebook and he called for Muslims to be wiped off the face of the earth. God love him. Right? He's a fucking idiot, right? But he was young. Nobody's allowed to make a mistake anymore without being destroyed. He's going to go to prison for this, by the way. Now, that's where the line is. Don't be recommending that people be killed or people be wiped off the face of the earth. Don't recommend it. Don't be encouraging it. But again, if I'm given the job of King Solomon, they make me King Solomon, he's not going to prison for that, you know. He's going to be bound over to the peace. Listen, go on Facebook and rant all you fucking want, you know. But don't be calling for people to be murdered. Yeah. Duxbury is his name. It's a good northwest name. Duxbury. Duxbury. St. John's University. He was an undergraduate there. He claimed he was exercising his right to free speech, but the jury found him guilty and he's awaiting sentencing. Looks like he's going to go to jail. Apparently he was reported to police about his far-right views when he was 15, eh? Such is the world we inhabit now. When he was 15. Teachers reported him for an inflammatory anti-Islam comment he made following the murder of Fusilier Rigby. That's Lee Rigby, of course. Be careful what you say online. What else do we have? What else do we have today? Well, we're still on, which is good. Kind of happy about that. There's a couple of other stories, but I am busy with the radio show. I have things to do. What else have we got? They're inconsequential stories, really. One of them is... Well, no, I suppose on the whole transphobia thing. This is in the Irish Times. It's an opinion piece by William Revel. Talking about jazz hands. It's very good. He goes on to talk about, in the article, this recent trend in universities in England and in America, where the universities give trigger warnings ahead of lectures. You know, we might be talking about sensitive information. Trigger warnings have been given in American universities to black students, you know. We're going to be talking about slavery in this lecture or the slave trade. This might trigger you, so you might not want to be present. This is fucking insane. Of course it is. But he writes about this and he takes a different point of view. Come away with a different point of view. I come away. He basically says if there is anything that triggers your anxiety, you need to confront it. I like this. I haven't seen any editorial in recent times to take this particular approach. Of course, if you are very, very anxious about spiders or about canines or felines, the thing to do is to confront that and to meet it head on and to put yourself in the situation. It's very good. I am fully in favour of measures to remove abnormal stress from young people's lives, for example, bullying and sexual harassment, and the long-established student counselling services are an essential part of normal third-level student health services. But serious normal stressors can never be removed entirely from human lives. We must be able, therefore, to deal with stress. I've said this 1,000 times on the radio show, haven't I? I said on the radio show many times that a paradigm shift has occurred where mental health is concerned. Mental health around younger folk, late teens, 20-somethings. And that paradigm shift has, they are being conditioned, I believe, into thinking that they can get through their lives. And it's a funny thing, this. You can get through your life without ever having to be presented with or confronted with something that you dislike. Now, this is patently fucking crazy, because life is full of encounters, not often, but with things that you don't like very much. And those of us over 40, we were brought up differently. We were brought up kind of hard. We were brought up with tough shit, Paddy. Get used to it, because there are people around you who see things and believe things different to you, and you have to put up with it. So either engage them in a robust debate, have a chat with them. As the great football manager Brian Clough once famously said, what do you do when some of your players disagree with you, Brian? Well, we sit down, we have a cup of tea, we have a nice chat for 15 minutes or so, and then we agree that I was right all along, said Mr. Clough. So that's how we were brought up. Yes, people will disagree with you, they'll contradict you, they will be unkind to you sometimes, but you just get on with it. Dust yourself down and move on. But not this generation. They're being, and it's devastating to their emotional growth and to their intellectual growth. They are being, I know I'm repeating it because I've been saying this on the radio show for years now, they are being conditioned into thinking you can sanitize your entire life, your experience. And of course, because they are increasingly experiencing life through a smartphone or a laptop or a tablet, well, they believe, of course, that it's true. Because smartphones, tablets and laptops enable them to eviscerate that which they find to be repugnant, disturbing, mildly annoying, or downright awful. Never have to confront it. Just bing, 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 bing. And that's coming true in their physical lives, isn't it? Because now they're absolutely outraged that Rachel Ara, the feminist, you know, she shouldn't be allowed to speak at Oxford because she doesn't believe that men with big dangly dicks and testicle, they're not really women. She doesn't believe that, so she can't speak at her university. So it's moving, evolving from the online experience to the physical, real experience, if it is real, of life. Ban it, disable it, deplatform it, get rid of it because I don't like it. It's going to be fucking boring for them. I like nothing more than meeting people whom I disagree with. I really do. Challenging people who can speak, who can articulate what it is they believe. Some of the best times I've had in Manchester have been going to the Trigger Warning Studios and debating issues with Hayden Hewitt, who sees many issues very differently to the way I see them. And him robustly and articulately expressing why he sees his why he sees things his way. It's good. It's very good. Sometimes I come away going, he's got a point there, yeah. No harm in that, you know. But that's where we're going, huh? Good article, Irish Times. Jazz hands. Imagine. Imagine we got to that. Don't clap. Do this. Fuck off. Fuck right off, I would say. Given the opportunity to speak to some of these snowflakes. Yeah. Anyway, that was a pile of shit. That was 50 minutes. You'll never get back as long as you live. I apologise for it. It's the end of it, by the way, and we got to the end of it without being kicked off. Lovely. And I didn't read out any of your comments. I apologise. But we're distracted. I'm distracted. There are things going on. I'm watching things. But the radio show will be live at 5 as usual. I look forward to your company. I look forward to chatting with Cherise again. Long chat with her yesterday. I've known her digitally. We've had a digital relationship for a number of years because she listens to the radio show and she's a big advocate of more information about the contents of vaccines and independent evaluations of medicines put into the public domain. And she's good. She's very articulate. And yeah, she should have been on the radio program in the past. I don't know why she hasn't. She's been happy to take a back seat, I think, and allow others come on, people whom she will know, other advocates, but also other journalists whom I've had on talking about it, doctors whom I've had on talking about it. But we'll get her on today. She's good. I think you'll like her. And she's coming at this from a different point of view, Johnny Cash. We will see each other at 5 then, or at least we'll hear each other. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Thank heavens we got through this. And thanks for your patience. I really appreciate it. Okay. See you later.